gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
I'm John O'Lobster. In 2007, one movie brought together Scarecrow, Captain America, Captain Philippa Georgiou, Moira McTaggart, Wong, the dad from Fear the Walking Dead, and Sinestro. That movie was written by the man who would create Ex Machina and directed by the man who will direct the 25th James Bond installment. That movie was Sunshine, and it was a box office flop. But just over a decade later, the legacy of the film seems brighter as many of its stars have found the spotlight and the director won a shiny Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire. So, should Sunshine go gently into that good night, or should it rage against the dying of the light?
This is going to be a fun cast because this movie is a little bit everything.
It doesn't know what it wants to be.
It doesn't know what it wants to be, but it's not bad.
It is everything. It is complete batshit insane camera stuff, sci-fi fuckery, and also there's a slasher movie in there somewhere. It's because an existential crisis, and it's awesome.
Usually when we go in space, I'm looking for one of these four scenarios.
Not all of them,
but somebody's right. Going to get mad, somebody's going to get sick, there's going to be some kind of monster.
Distress signal.
Things are going to go wrong on the ship.
Okay.
Yeah, or there's going to be some time travel element. So sure. I'm waiting for which one's going to happen.
Who actually saw this in the theaters other than me? Anyone?
I did not.
No.
Okay.
I didn't even know this existed.
Let's talk about the extent of my watching this movie. I watched it in the theaters, and I liked it.
2007.
Up until the end, right? This is right after I got out of all of my addiction and shit. So I was like, oh, I'm going to start going to movies that I might remember.
This seems like a nice, relaxing, chill time at the cinema. No, I'm going to go.
It seems like good, high sci-fi, and then it goes sideways. So anyways, I watched it then. I liked it. I didn't know what to think about it. I bought the DVD. It's Wing knows I have a propensity for buying all DVDs. So sure. I watched it one or two more times, and I'm like, okay, I don't need to watch that again. Then we decided to do it for this cast, and I watch it with my girlfriend. We're watching it, and it's the same, obviously it's the same movie from my mind, but she brought up all the same gripes that I have. It's a great, like, sci-fi flick. It's a up until they dock with the other ship, and then they pick up the slasher film.
Yeah.
Which is cool and all, but then I don't know if the prosthetics were so horrible
until Angry Deadpool shows up.
Yeah, well, why can't we see him? I understand that douchebaggery.
That was my point, is that were the prosthetics and the shit so bad that they had to do the shaky cam? Because my girlfriend right away brought up the same question. Is he like... does he have powers? Is he kind of mystical? Not mystical, but you know what I mean? Like, did something happen to him where he's more? That's what the whole shaky cam is.
God told him to send them all to heaven.
That's so fucked up then.
Yeah.
It is fucked up.
It is super fucked up. This is a start to finish fucked up movie. I recommended to you guys Mikey Loves Movies. Video that kind of dissects it. And the first thing he points out is the name of the ship is Icarus.
Mm-hmm.
Icarus in mythology flew too close to the sun and died.
Yeah.
And the backstory of the film is that they did this once. They made a ship, they loaded it with a bomb and a bunch of people and sent it hurtling towards the sun, and nothing happened. They lost the ship. They lost contact.
So let's do it again.
So let's do it absolutely everything again.
We should have just said Icarus Jr.
Yeah, Icarus 2. Okay, let's try again. You know, let's do that same thing again.
As soon as they shipped it and they said, oh, we're on the Icarus 2, my girlfriend goes, they have read mythology, right?
Right.
I mean, it's all... But that's the point. Up until the slasher bit, even some of the slasher bit is okay, but it just... It gets so off the rails there, and then they try to bring it back with the hard sci-fi, which I like, but what?
Yeah, the fourth act is just like a mix of the best of Event Horizon with the worst of Interstellar.
Wow.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
That is...
Yeah.
That
the music's
works.
Better, though.
The music, but and the cinematography,
yeah,
all the sun shots and the Venus passes and all that shit. When they're in the viewing rooms, when what's-his-face, the dad from Walking Dead, it accepts Ada, his fate.
Do you see Canada?
No, but when he Canada. Finally accepts his fate in the whatever, Icarus 1, and just takes the heat and light.
Turns it on, man.
Fucking awesome.
Huh? Turn that burner up to high.
Poof.
Yeah. Oh, I just love the line when they're like, what's all this dust? And he goes, human skin. And they're like, excuse me? And you know you're thinking it. You're like, oh, fuck. They toasted themselves. And then he's like, yeah, like most of dust is human skin. And you're like, uh-huh.
I think that's where I learned that fun
Did
fact.
Did you guys catch the when they go on Icarus 1 and they're swinging their flashlights around? Did you see the faces?
Yes.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I love that.
I don't know why they put that there, though. It doesn't go anywhere.
This movie is foreshadowing. All of it. Wing, you're usually the foreshadowing king. All of this movie is foreshadowing.
Yeah, I got they presented everything we needed to know until we get to the end and all that jazz. On the other hand, I would not advise to watch this movie being like, okay, I need to watch this movie right now, and it needs to finish by 9. So because
you're watching the clock, right?
Yeah, and maybe I lost a little bit of the ambiance of it because I was like, okay, you're falling to the sun. You've been falling to the sun for the last 10 minutes trying to explode. Can you just explode?
Just explode already.
Yeah.
There are some nuances, but it is a beautiful movie. It really is. But it loses its shit, and it doesn't, from there for me personally, it loses traction.
Do you think it ever had its shit?
Because yeah.
I've seen it a couple times.
Sorry, it loses its traction, though. It may have never had its shit, but whatever traction and semblance of good sci-fi, crazy people, because like that video you shared points out, it is 7 or 8 different professionals, so there is going to be this butting of heads. There's going to be the quirky silences, but when you become the slasher film, in my mind, you lose so much traction that it can never refind it.
Agreed.
Well, it all hinges on choices have consequences.
Correct. Completely.
So the choice to dock with Icarus 1, they never really address the worst possible outcome of that. They say, well, you know, we could dock with Icarus 1. It takes us off course, and maybe we go there and we can fly the ship, or maybe not. Okay. Worst case scenario, we waste time. We throw off our approach a little bit. We toast our plant bay. You know, those are like the worst things. They never even consider, what if there's a reason that Icarus 1 didn't make it to the final destination?
On purpose.
Maybe there's someone, on purpose. Maybe there's someone still alive on that ship that's going to fuck with us.
What do you mean you're the captain? You're a comms officer on a ship with no comms.
it all plays into that. And the fact that you have the foreshadowing of the psych officer becoming
worshiping
sun worshiper he gets this kind of sun psychosis that is already kind of foreshadowing he is a few weeks away from
being the next captain guy.
Being the next pinbacker, right?
Yeah, I mean his I love they do that beautifully where every scene he's in, his face gets a little bit more red or a little bit more peely.
He starts
to where,
picking at us.
Yeah, he's in the background of some scenes and you just see him peeling his skin until you realize it, you're like, oh my God.
he's becoming a crispy critter.
Yeah.
He's like what's his face from
Gold Member.
Yes, thank you.
Picking at it. Picking off the big chunks and eating them.
I save it and eat it.
This cast is phenomenal. Obviously, the names that we recognize now, who were complete unknowns at this point. I mean, Cliff Curtis, even Chris Evans, he'd done the Fantastic Four movies, but he was still kind of a jobbing actor and things like this. Benedict Wong.
All of them, really. I mean, they all done stuff, but they... Wow.
Cillian Murphy is working with two directors, Christopher Nolan and Danny Boyle.
Yeah. Rose Byrne is kind of the other big name. She gets kind of top billing. Michelle Yeoh is somebody that you would recognize from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and some other
stuff.
James Bond. Yeah. Mark Strong is Pinbacker. And you don't even know it's him, but Mark Strong is kind of one of my favorite. The guy from That Thing guy.
Right. Like every man
shows up in so much good stuff.
I felt a little cheated from this with Kappa, though, because I'd seen him in 28 Days Later and whatnot, and that's what I knew him as. And then I see him in this, and he's such a
Debbie Downer.
Yeah, he's such a frail shell of, and granted, the dude in 28 Days Later is not some big tough guy, but he handles it all better.
Yeah, but you can pick him up as the main character super fast because he's the one that has the more growing to do.
Yeah,
right away when they're like, I think the only person that should make this choice is our person dedicated to blow up the bomb, the physicist, and he's in the corner and he just goes, shit.
Yeah. You should never go around.
But they also kind of foreshadow. He has a hard time making decisions because he's trying to record a message for his family, and he keeps starting over and deleting it.
Yep.
So he's already.
If it might be your last message, though, I mean.
Oh, absolutely. But other people also want to send their last message. Don't get to.
I didn't notice that till this time that everybody was kind of pacing outside the room.
Yeah. While he's going at it.
Humming and hawing, yeah.
But then the message he records and sends is repeated at the end of the movie, which I thought was very good. But
that I did think was cool.
Icarus is kind of a HAL-type voice. It's this very soothing... there are five... people.
Yeah.
What do you mean there are five people? The math says
we should be fine now. Why is it hard for me? Well, no, there are five people. What do you mean?
Yeah. You didn't go intruder alert. Intruder alert.
Hey,
I know that people start to be stupid at that point.
I know that two of your people have died, but all of a sudden there's an extra person on board. Did one come back alive? Like, come on, computer. And the being able to remove the four mainframe computers from the coolant, you'd have to have a code to do that. Right. And I understand dropped a chip, but
they built the same ship again. They literally made a copy.
But there's got to be a different code for each person.
Why would they change it?
I fucking hate you.
The command code.
I hate you.
The guy's not coming back.
Right. So why worry about him? Oh God damn it!
He was the captain,
so he had the fucking override code
again. And he was
one,
on the ship.
Two,
and
three, he was on the ship four,
by himself for seven
five.
Years. So he probably had time to figure out a workaround, even if he, you know what I mean.
But you know, I would fix that movie. I would have got that guy to die in the airlock exchange and not have him in the rest of the movie running after them, but just having like defect after defect, killing them one after the other or something like that.
I like that he's there. It adds another element to it.
If they zoomed in on him.
One of the things I hate about these movies, and I will point my finger directly at the Alien Covenant Prometheus movie franchise, where you have all of these very highly intelligent scientific minds doing absolutely stupid shit. Like, let's take our mask off and breathe in the spores from the alien planet. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
If I may, I work with public, and most people are stupid, even if they have like a lot of, they're good at one thing.
Again, exactly. You're good at one thing, and your one thing is being on a spaceship hurtling towards the sun. Okay, Benedict Wong makes a really stupid move. He changes the ship. He does everything. He forgets to change the angle
because he was
the
checking
shield.
The math, which could be an oversight that you could make.
One very simple mistake, and from there things spiral. But on the other hand, I like that it's someone actively sabotaging them rather than the suspension of disbelief that, oh, we keep doing things wrong. The accidents keep happening. Do you know what I mean?
I wish they would have focused on either him more or him less than. They got rid of the shaky cam and they spent another $250,000 or whatever the fuck good effects costs and figured out how to make him look like a guy that has sat in the sun with barely no filter for the last 6 years.
Right.
And that's my point is you could have done it effectively without making him look like he had supernatural powers.
I don't know. I kind of like that it's the sun and you can't look at the sun. And
so you can't look at him?
The camera doesn't really settle on Pinbacker. Like, you see him at the end because he's got him hanging over the side and they pull his arm skin off.
But even before in the viewing room, yes, I get that. When he first sees him, you can't focus on him. And even a few minutes after that, Kappa can't see him because he just looked past him into the sun. But everybody else in the Earth room or whatever, the Earth remedy room, you should be able to see this guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's cool.
I still like the fucking movie. It just irritates me that it goes so far off the rails right there.
They also have security cameras everywhere, and you see them looking at each other on security cameras and all that. And one other thing that bothers me and always bothers me in space movies is how do you have artificial gravity, and why does the artificial gravity still work when the computer and everything else gets turned off?
Ah, I never thought of that. But in The Expanse, which is about to play its third season, fourth episode tomorrow night.
Why they have artificial gravity.
Gravity boots or magnetic boots.
Magnetic boots, or when the ship is under thrust or accelerating or decelerating, they have gravity.
Yep.
But in this film, they have artificial gravity when they're standing in the airlock, but then once the airlock decompresses, they float.
I think I did notice that, too. It's not perfect for that, and it's not perfect for a lot of things, but it's still a fun movie. It just goes so sideways at some spots.
Well, if you're starting to go mad in there, do you really think you can create a star out of it?
You make a star within a star?
Yeah.
Is our sun really going to burn out? That's probably also not going to happen.
That's the inverse that's going to happen. So let's not get scientific with this shit.
It'll expand before it burns out.
There is a theory that if a micro black hole came into contact with the sun, it would have that effect. That's kind of what they went off from that.
But I like the concept. That writer has always a good idea to just like have like, okay, let's take this
and
focus on that idea. Yep. So
and theoretically, if you could blow up the sun and restart it with a bomb, that I guess is it's a pretty ingenious delivery system,
and it's great because it's great human drama. It's just a setup for that,
and holy fuck, this movie looks amazing. Like I don't care whatever you want to say. I hope you watched it on Blu-ray, or I hope you have the Blu-ray, because like this film looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
The sound, the set designs, the designs of the suits, because they actually made two of those fucking heavy-ass suits.
And made them just so the actors would freak out and feel claustrophobic.
Yeah, I mean, the design of this, that's why it irritates me so much that it goes so sideways, because this movie is beautiful, great sound, great visuals. The story up until right about the third act is damn near perfect, because it's human drama at its finest. That's why I like sci-fi or post-apocalyptic or whatever. It's because it's throw you in this situation, what would you do?
And again, I think that the addition of Pinbacker is excusable in that, I mean, if that's really what happened to Icarus One, and you go and dock with Icarus One, that I mean, his main goal is to sabotage, right? So, I mean, I think that plays. I think that unfortunately they do give in to some of those slasher film tropes. I mean,
they miss the cue.
He sneaks up behind her. And
why do you gotta have a vibrating fucking knife? There's no point in that. It's like
a vibro scalpel.
Yeah, you got to just make it futuristic. I mean, I get the guy could have lived for the 7 years and he could have become a sun worshipping, baked to a crisp, whatever. But just don't.
Wouldn't you also get cancer at some point too, and just die?
What's that?
Wouldn't you get skin cancer at some point and just die?
I mean, if you figure within however many years they say down here, you can get it. If you're
because you're talking to God.
They also say that the sun is going dark, but it's still really freaking bright.
When you're that fucking close to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I just, that is where it really misses a beat. I can get behind the crazy captain living on his ship who just wants a sabotage.
Yeah, agreed. But not the shaky, weird, we can't see him, we won't let you see him for no reason whatsoever.
And then at the end, I like the high sci-fi where time breaks down and shit like that goes sideways. But again, it's still just overly confusing enough with they drop him off the side, yet gravity is so intense he can stand up on the downside, and like
they never really explain why that is, other than I guess it's a super dense core to the bomb,
right?
But it's umbrella shaped, or whatever, but it's also a cube. I don't know.
It's weird.
Well, the umbrella shape was just the sun shield and the solar shield, right?
That's also the bomb. That's the part that they drop in to the sun.
Oh, you're right, because then it goes from being the shell to...
They pop the head off the dandelion and float away.
Okay, can we talk about the really, really ridiculous idea that they all think they're going to come back?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, this is a one-way mission. As soon as they were like, we're coming back, I was like, seriously?
They do wrestle with that. I mean, they do...
When did they say for sure they were coming back? Because
they talk about having enough juice for the return trip. Return journey,
I
or
think
enough
that's
oxygen,
more
enough,
but I what think, you call it.
I think they all ultimately know it's probably a one-way trip.
Right.
And then they say, well, four of us can make it. We need to lose somebody. That's where I think it's interesting, too.
No, see, I think that was more four of us can make it. We need to lose three people if...
Well, one point,
That was in his direction.
Right, but if we can get to the bomb... I don't think it was make it back home. I think it was...
Yeah,
we rupture,
make it to the drop-off.
Exactly. We just make it to the drop-off.
They go really fast to, okay, we're not going to come back. But I think that would have been interesting to have this character already knowing they're going to die and then having, like, their last message and nothing.
Well, then it kind of raises the stakes of, if you sign up for a one-way trip, how stable are you really?
There you go.
But see, and I think they all knew, quotey fingers, that it was a one-way trip,
right?
But you have to have some semblance of hope that there's a potential.
They all knew it was a possibility.
Right, that you might make it back if you plan right, but really you are betting or wagering your life and the life of your 6, 7, 8, 9 crew members on all of humanity.
Right,
so,
all of humanity. Yep.
And again, fucking Captain America being gangster voice of reason McGee. Like, everything he says in this movie, like that goofy clip you shared, Lobster, was on point.
What are you trying to remind us of, our lost humanity? It is. There's a cold calculation that has to go into it, and I think that it's interesting how the film kind of balances the harsh reality with the more metaphysical, philosophical considerations.
True.
As well. Because, you know, at a certain point, you're like, well, humanity had its chance. This is the end. This is the ultimate end. Like,
but we as a people will always fight.
Right. You'll fight for it, but ultimately, you know, this is what God wants. God is turning off the sun. That's it. Lights out. So, it's interesting that a lot of the metaphor in this film is about either mankind replacing God, defeating God, or God is dead, and man has to kind of step up and prove that can master the
fire.
The interstellar furnace.
I like that the engineer, though, being Captain America, is always the one to say the harsh reality. You know, these are what the numbers equal.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to die.
I'm the captain.
But at the end, he ends up as a literal capsicle.
Yeah, he does. I didn't care when that guy died.
Can I tell you what grosses me out about this movie? All right. You're in an enclosed space with recirculated air. It's hot. It's sweaty. You're close to the sun. And everyone's wearing sandals.
That's true,
huh? Ew.
What does that matter? The recirculated air and water, whether you wash your socks, is still going to get back in your mouth hole. Right?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Even your feet stuffed in your sheets.
Don't have your toes out, though.
Dude, what are you talking about? You're drinking each other's pee. Right. So at this point,
your feet stuffed in your sheets at night. I'm gonna wash the sheets or whatever, and then I'm still gonna drink your toe water.
water.
Can't they use the toe water to water the plants and then
from your shit, man.
When it recirculates in the rain room.
Lobster, I think they use the water to recirculate the water. It's not like a trailer park with gray water.
I still don't want to see Captain America in his mandals, in his Tevas.
I love his flip flops.
All right. One of the things I was going to bring up later, I guess in news, but I kind of want to talk about now, is I just finished watching Lost in Space on Netflix.
I haven't yet, so don't spoil
me. Was it good?
It was actually really good, and there are a lot of parallels to this, which I think is kind of fun. Now, we talked about the 1990s Lost in Space movie a while back, but I think the new show is much better and a little closer to Sunshine in a way.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you tell why without...
Yes, I can give you the backstory without, I think, spoiling what happens in the story. So the situation is that a meteor has struck planet Earth, and it's caused a disruption in climate, and governments have collapsed, and Earth is just not a very nice place to live anymore. So they come up with a plan to colonize Alpha Centauri,
right.
which is the nearest star.
That's the same
system.
From the original.
Yeah. And so the whole mission is to send all of these families to Alpha Centauri. And so what happens is you have this one ship called the Resolute ferrying families back and forth, and then each family gets a ship called a Jupiter, which then they use to land on Alpha Centauri.
Are they still the Jupiter too?
They are still the Jupiter too, but there's like 50 other Jupiters with them,
but just not the two.
But theirs is the two. The Robinson family belongs to Jupiter too, right? So the Resolute goes back and forth. This is actually the 24th mission. They're on the outbound voyage. Something goes wrong, and they end up landing on this planet. Now, what this Lost in Space does that previous versions haven't done is the Robinson family is not alone. There are other colonists and whatnot.
That's cool. Fodder to kill.
Right. So it's a little bit more like Earth 2 or Battlestar Galactica.
I like Earth 2.
Did you not like?
Cool.
No, I liked it. That was one of my early fucking sci-fi.
I'll watch a bit of that.
Yeah. So it's cool.
It had John Locke in it, for crying out loud.
Absolutely. And it goes in a direction where you could almost call this season a prequel, but I won't spoil
why. Okay, no. Yep. Stop it. We're good. So check out Lost in Space on Netflix.
It's cool. It's a good show. It's well acted. It's a lot funnier than I expected in a good way. And by the end of it, you really like the Robinsons and you really hate Dr. Smith.
Cool. That's
perfect.
As it should be.
Do we have more notes for this?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that this movie made me think of, you know, in the old genre. Have you guys seen Pandora?
Yes, that was where their colony ship crashed or something, but it was years later and all the colonists became mutants.
China, and then there's like a time travel element, and anyway, it's very fucked up, but yeah.
Did you like it or no?
I remember the first time I saw it being like perplexed, the second time really liking the idea and everything, but finding that why did they put that much horror element in there, because they had a good
Saying this is something we should try to watch again?
I think we should. That's something I haven't watched in 10 years.
All right, well, Pandora.
Down the list.
Because I watched it once and I was like, I don't know. So I'm adding it to the list right now.
Yeah, and it's the same vein of these space fucked up movies with.
Have you guys seen Silent Running?
No.
This that kind sounds of, familiar.
Kind of in the same genre.
Ugh, Wing's got to say it like he's swallowing his tongue.
Genre.
No, you gotta. There you go.
That's about in the same vein. Also, there's definitely some Event Horizon. There's definitely some Space Odyssey in here too.
There's everything. If you watch a space movie, there's probably some nuggets of it in there. Yep. Okay, let's read this puppy.
Crispy skin fried nuggets.
Ew.
Oh, and also I want to say from the soundtrack, Adagio in D minor is in everything, including another movie featuring Mark Strong. That movie is Kick-Ass. That's probably where you've heard that before. Check out the wiki link for it. I posted some different versions of it in our GroupMe for you guys to check out, but it is like iconic.
Cool.
Good stuff.
So, Senor Wing.
That would be me.
For Sunshine. Oh, God, where's the ratings? For Sunshine, are you going Legendary?
The Sun of All Cheers.
Legend of Its Time.
Boiling Point.
Cult Legend.
Now go get your shine box.
Awesome.
Here Comes the Sun, and I say it's all right.
Entertaining.
Black Hole Sun.
Mabel.
Everything about the delivery and effectiveness of this payload is entirely theoretical.
Forgettable.
I couldn't icker less.
Abysmal.
You might as well be walking on the sun.
Spring Breakers Highlander D&D.
Solaris, the George Clooney remake.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of son of a bitch.
This is a tough one, but I think I have to go Mabel. I mean, I love kind of everything there is in this movie here and there, but it's such a mess that just the pacing that kind of, okay, I think I'm in that kind of pacing. Oh, no, it turns around and then it changes again. At some point, it loses you a little bit, but every element of these taken individually works really well. They're mixed together weird. I would edit that movie in some other ways. It's not bad, but I wouldn't go to like a entertaining or anything else of that vein. It's a Mabel movie. I would recommend watching it, but don't get your hopes up too much, you know? Beef?
I hate kind of agreeing with you. I was going to go Mabel just on everything about the delivery system and its effectiveness of the payload is entirely theoretical.
Yeah.
But the first two-thirds of the movie-ish is definitely Black Hole Sun, so entertaining. But the end is for sure Mabel. So it's like Black Hole Sun, everything about the delivery system and effectiveness of that payload. It's like somewhere in the middle. And also, it's got a side of son of a bitch, because this is one of the first like real hard sci-fi movies I tried to watch after I was clear-minded.
Sure.
So
it didn't help. It
did not. So I gotta go right around that whole area. Mabel, maybe some entertaining mixed in.
But just when the one or two, would you say to someone, watch it?
I would preface it with, you know, it's really good sci-fi. A lot of sci-fi sometimes it's like anime, right?
So yes,
a lot of good anime is
yes
good, and then all of a sudden it takes a weird dash for the last 30 minutes and you're like, well, fuck.
Kind of like Interstellar in a way.
Well, Interstellar was heady and shit. It didn't also have the extra slasher flick added in.
No, just piano strings.
I really gotta watch that again. So yeah, it's solidly Mabel. Lobster.
Okay, so I think Sunshine for me is a cult legend. So go get your shine box and listen to what I have to say, because there is so much jam-packed into this movie. And you're right, it is juggling with a lot of things. It is wrestling with a lot of things. But at the end of the day, it's a very simple story. And it's told so compellingly. And I have to say, I think it's a misconception that they added the slasher stuff at the end of the movie because they thought it was going to be a boring ending. There wasn't enough drama. They needed something to add more tension. Obviously, there's enough tension. There's plenty of real estate there for things to go wrong. But I think that the movie is wrestling with more metaphorical, philosophical questions than it is wrestling with technical issues. This isn't The Martian. This is definitely a philosophical debate about man's role and responsibility in the universe. So, you know, if the sun goes out, and assuming it's not our fault that the sun is going out, and we try to fix it to save humanity.
Is it our right?
is it our right to interfere with something like that? And at the same time, how do you tell someone that their mission is to basically play God? That you need to fly halfway across the solar system and do this thing, which is, again, entirely theoretical, but really you're stepping into this godlike role. And again, I think the film plays with disorientation. It plays with basically, obviously, there's this kind of fabric, this rigid structure that's holding these people together on this mission. But at the same time, do you go all logical? Do you let your emotions kind of guide you when morality starts to get in the way? What do you do? I mean, it's really, really interesting. And I think, this film is beautiful. It looks good. It sounds amazing. These are all people that are fantastic actors in here that are working on this. And it's really, I think, a modern classic. And I think it's something that I think we'll continue to go back to, and people will say good things about it.
I want that movie. I have 80% of that movie, but I want them to give us those questions and them talking about Icarus and why are we doing this? Is it for humanity? Is it for our own vanity? Because we know this might be a one-way trip. If it had all that, you know, and even they can have the slasher shit, but still, it is all there, but it is missing something, or enough of it gets muddled so it loses something. Sorry to rebuttal. God, I'm an asshole.
I agree with.
Oh God, that makes me hurt even more. I'm sorry, Lobster. Last word on Sunshine.
Well, we're really on the same page on this movie. That's God, really I hate impressive. It. That's rare.
I know.
But wait. Next week we're talking about Avengers. We're not going to be on the same page whatsoever.
Same page. Wing. Last word on Sunshine.
Lights out.
I feel better, but huh?
Huh? Kaneda, Lobster. What do you see? Kaneda, what do you see?
Oh, and the music is building right there.
So good.
And you see, like the wave of heat and light. Oh.
It's a damn good movie.
Yeah, fuck it. I'm wrong. Go check it out. It's not that good, but still look at it. Look at it and listen to it.
Well, you should definitely look at it.
Yeah.
You should definitely watch it.
But we have to put it somewhere on our scale. So
put some techno on in the background like you would do with anime and just look at it.
But that's why I was asking Beef on the scale of like yes or no. Would you recommend it? Because I would. Anybody that tells me I like sci-fi, I would be like, yeah, you should watch it. I would say this is one in the middle of the road one, but it's very interesting. Yeah. That would be my...
I would say it's not so esoteric that it's going to turn you off if you're not into philosophy and movies.
Right.
And it's not so... It's not the core. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not so dumbed down action that it loses all sense of reality. So I think it's good.
For sure. Yeah. I can agree with that.
Buff Beef, what time is it?
News time.
Okay, we are recording on May 1st. Mayday, mayday, mayday. We have a new box office king.
I think we should call
Black Panther came back to number 5. That's incredible. He's the king.
He is the king.
Oh, Black Panther did. Yeah, that's awesome. We knew that.
We have a mad titan ruling the box office, you guys. Avengers Infinity War scored the biggest box office opening of all time. And I'm going to qualify this a couple different ways. One, domestically, with $257,698,183, beating Star Wars The Force Awakens by no slim margin, by $10 million to take this top.
I like the next opening. One.
Okay, so worldwide, this is accounting for all theaters in the world. This is the biggest box office opening of all time with 640 million. 0.521.
Yeah.
Beating the previous record held by Fate of the Furious by 100 million.
And
it hasn't even opened in China yet. It opens in China May 11th.
Nuh-uh.
So that is without one of the biggest markets in the world. So
Yeah.
What I'd like to take
away. Well, when you market the movie for 10 years.
True.
Fair point. You would say that any less would have been a disappointment. However.
No, I was expecting this to score 215, 220. Hmm? 257 is nuts.
This, what I take away from this is, yes, it made a lot of cash. But I'd like to point out A Quiet Place is still lurking. It has to date last night or whatever made $149.4 million and it's only $17 million budget.
Sure. Avengers Infinity War probably, if you count part one and, well, what we don't know is part two, but what is part
Let's
two?
Face it, that's part
two. Yeah.
Is part two. Probably one of the most expensive movies of all time. In terms of single films, Avengers Infinity War is probably one of the most expensive movies of all time. Jointly, it's, you know, probably definitely up there with Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and the really big multi-picture movies.
You know, Waterworld and, you know.
Yes, Waterworld, yes.
Sorry, I don't know. I reached back.
At this point, we're talking
one.
More of the Avatars. Where remember in the days, the movie would have to make $1 billion to be profitable. Yeah. Now it's like, is this going to pass the $1 billion?
Did you hear him whining about Avengers burnout soon?
Shut up.
People are going to get Avengers burnout soon because, you know, Avatar's coming back.
Lucky for you, we're going to talk about Avengers Infinity War in spoilerific detail.
Next week.
We can't really call any flop alerts this weekend because nothing dared open against Avengers. I suspect that next weekend we'll be talking about a flop or two. Even a 50% drop is still over 100 million.
I think that's going to be... Okay, let's talk about that.
Okay, fine.
I think the drop is going to be huge because people like me want to see it the first weekend so I can live on the internet.
Yes.
Because I want to see the movie, but I'll be honest. If it was not like I could not go on YouTube anymore because that's the only thing that was everywhere... Sure. I would probably not have seen it this weekend.
But there's going to be a bunch of people that didn't see it this weekend because of nerds like us that are going to go next weekend and the weekend after.
I predict like a drop of at least 60 to 65%, if not 70% on this. I think the drop is huge.
I'll call it 30% to 40%. No more than 40.
You understand by saying no more than 40, you're saying that this movie is going to make $165 million next weekend.
Yeah, borrow $152.
At the outside, okay.
About that.
Star Wars The Last Jedi, weekend one made $220 million.
Yeah.
Weekend two made $71 million for a 67.5% drop.
Ooh, I guess
weekend
you put
three,
it in there.
It went back up to 99. Do you know what I mean? So, like, the Christmas weekend, it went back up.
Yeah.
Deadpool, though. You know, Deadpool's going to fuck up weekend three, baby.
Yeah, I mean, but again, I'm going to go see it again this weekend. I know a lot of people, I think this is a movie where enough happens or so much happens that I think you need an extra viewing to process everything. Like, I want to go back just for the jokes, because there
the
was
jokes,
a lot of stuff.
I couldn't. I can't even remember
stuff
any of them.
I missed just because the people in the audience were having such a good time.
Okay, everybody that doesn't know, plug your ears. The only joke that I remember is the Spider-Man joke with the, oh my God, it smells like a new car in here. That's the only thing I remember. Like, that's literally, I came out of there with like all these jokes in my brain. And then I got home, and I didn't remember any of them.
My favorite one from Spider-Man is, "Don't lay your eggs in me." So, again, I want to go back and see it again.
I got to go see it before we record next week.
I think that people will want to go see this again. I think The Last Jedi caught a lot of people the wrong way. So you had
if you want to compare to something, it's Force Awakens.
Okay, so The Force Awakens has the biggest second weekend of all time.
What was the drop?
Okay, give me a second. I am.
Well, you gotta be all percentage.
At the same like kind of 10 years of wait, but there was a different wait, and not just like where this is building to, but oh, this is coming back. So that's what I was saying. Yes. It's not the same situation, but it's the closest we're gonna get.
So let's just say, for argument's sake, Star Wars: The Force Awakens made in weekend one $247 million. Weekend two, 149 million. It only dropped 39%. So again, I'm saying even a 50% drop.
This has the rewatch. Hang on, do me a favor. Go back and look at 2012. Look at the Avengers 2012. I'll bet you that fucking drop was like 20%, if that. Because back then, everybody was like, oh my God, this is the shit, I got to take my kids. Now they've been waiting 10 years. Those fucking kids have kids.
Don't bring your kids to that movie.
Kids have kids. So we're going to say that in 2012, The Avengers Weekend 1, and I'm clicking on this weekend right now. Let's see. Marvel's The Avengers, $207 million. Wonderful. The next weekend, $103 million.
Oh, never mind.
It dropped 50%.
50%.
Normal drop,
Normal again,
but so, Marvel is not normal anymore because these last four box office in a row. It's okay. Yeah, there's something
let's
else.
Say,
now.
Let's say Black Panther. Do you guys know off the top of your head what Black Panther dropped in the second weekend?
Just off 42%.
No.
How do you guys not have this in your head? 44%. Very.
Oh, yeah,
good.
I wasn't bad. That wasn't bad.
There you go. All right.
Yeah,
so
but it has legs, though, so.
It's going to have legs for sure, at least for another weekend or two.
Till Deadpool.
We'll come back to this next weekend and see how we're right. So I'm going to say even 50. Beef?
Fuck, you guys are making me misjudge. I'll say no more than the answer to everything. No more than a 42% drop.
Nice.
I'm keeping my 60.
Cojones. And Wing says 60. Okay, I typed these in the doc, so it's now official.
Good, good.
Okay, all right. S.J. Clarkson becomes the first female director in the history of the Star Trek franchise. She will direct Star Trek IV. S.J. Clarkson has directed lots of television episodes from Dexter to Jessica Jones.
It's so funny because J.J. Abrams, a week or two before, announced that, okay, my second unit director on Star Wars is going to be a woman. And then he basically just upped himself because he's producing this movie too. And like, okay, let's give Star Trek a female director.
And don't forget, Quentin Tarantino says he's involved in making a Star Trek movie as well. So,
yeah, when is that? Has there been any more news on that potential crap?
That
or
would be
no?
Star Trek 5,
Nope, we don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're...
That would be something different.
So that was Star Trek. If you're a Star Wars fan, Star Wars Resistance, an anime-influenced animated series, will debut on the Disney Channel in the fall. So Resistance is set before The Force Awakens, just like Rebels was set before the original trilogy.
That's cool.
Cool.
I mean, that's a good place to have an animated series in Star Wars. Rebel was great. So
yeah. So
yeah,
let's
that
see
was
if they
a lot
can
of fun.
They can up themselves with that one. Incredibles 2 official trailer.
Woo-hoo! Do you really need a trailer to know you're going to see this movie?
I think we're all going to see it. That's That's why I believe I put it in my top five.
Yeah, honestly, and I stole it for your top five, but yes. When I was there watching, what's the name, and the trailer for this came on, you might be right. As high as you put this up, this might be the one of the hits of the year.
A lot of people in that theater wanted to say, honey, where's my super suit?
Right.
That was a good time.
And they seem to have another bit like this. Yee-hoo.
Also, just yesterday, we got the, or actually just today, maybe, we got the trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp. The full trailer looks good.
Yeah, I'm excited. I really like her, so why not?
Evangeline.
They seem to be grooming Cassie to become the next...
kiddo?
Yeah. She's the next Ant-Man. The
future of the Marvel franchise. They'll bring back the kid from Iron Man 3. They'll have Cassie from Ant-Man. What other children are in the MCU? Pepper Potts. If we're to believe Tony Stark's dream.
The young Avenger do exist. Young
Avengers. Do exist. Oh, and of course, Spider-Man. Because he's a child.
But the young Avenger do exist in the comics. And the way that Marvel is going, I would not be surprised to see like those four little Avengers come back at some point.
Sure, there you go. So those were trailers. That's the news, box office.
Whew. That's hammer time right there.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Or next time.
There you go.
Next week, Legends Pod. Oh, with an arm. Next week, Legends Podcast, Infinity War, spoiler special. Yeah, we're gonna excited for that.
We're going to talk again about starting sons and shit.
Yes, we will.
Oh, my God. Shut up.
We got to do one. Yeah, that's right.
This has been episode 371 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, Sunshine, you could have been so much better, but you're still a lot of fun for a while.
I'm John D saying, yeah, you're totally right, Rabbit.
And I'm Lobster saying, sunshine on my shoulder makes me happy.
Rabbit. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or KrakenCast. No infringement is intended.